With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the All Stats Aren't We review of the Wolves home game and a preview of the Southampton away game. I'm Darren Driver, the Ilan Meslier man of the match performance of the podcast. The brickbats may come later, but thank God we've still got him. And I'm here with Josh Hobbs, the Wolves time-wasting tactics of the podcast. As always, he's going to do everything in the most considered way possible. And finally, the Jesse Marsh PR campaign of the podcast. He's causing beef with every manager, but making sure the South Stand love him. It's Adam Elliott. Adam, how you doing, brother?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, I've had a busy week, a productive week. And a cherry on top, we've signed a goalkeeper. And I know you love to talk about those, Darren.
I do love to talk about goalkeepers. However, I will give fair warning that I do not know anything about this particular goalkeeper, so I won't be saying anything about him at all. Hobbsy, how are you doing?
Good, mate. Makes a big difference, doesn't it? Starting the season with a win, getting the monkey off the back first game. how long did we wait? It was October. Last season, I think.
Yeah. Although John McKenzie and I were, I don't know why I call him John McKenzie every time I refer to him now. John and I were on Sky Sports at the Watford game that we eventually won last season, stood under the scoreboard. There was a very nice shot of us. So
I forgot about that.
That was a nice memory from a win, which should have come much sooner. Anyway, that's enough for now of that. Let's have a quick roundup of the news, such as it is, before we get into the review of the Wolves game. So, yeah, Adam, tell us how the transfer window's going. There have been a couple of developments, one of which you've already briefly referred to, but on you go.
Obviously we've signed a goalkeeper, which is nice because I feel like we did need a more experienced backup. Our oldest and most experienced goalkeeper was Ilan Meslier at 22 years old. That's not ideal, in my opinion. I mean, Klaassen did fairly well at the end of last season for us when we needed him in the Wolves game, and for the 23s he started to pick up a little bit, but I think having a more established backup is probably for the best. And I mean, he's not got loads of games under his belt. He's normally been a number two throughout his career, but he's still, you know, he's got some Premier League experience and some experience of this country, so that's pretty good. On other things, we haven't got Callum Wendo. It looks like he's off to Stade Rennes. And then, yeah, I guess we'll talk about potentially other strikers. I don't know if Hobbsy, you want to talk about maybe Che Adams a little bit?
Well, just I think I've said before that he's one that I would go for. I know he's not the exciting options, especially like knowing that we were linked with Decatur Lara as a, like, the, I think Radrizzani called it the, like, cherry on top or the icing on the cake signing. Che Adams obviously wouldn't be that, but it just means that if Bamford is ever out or he's hits a horrible run of form or something like that, we have an alternative option that still maintains the tactical system that we're trying to play. And I personally think that's important.
So that'd be more of a, what you'd call a floor raising signing rather than a ceiling raising one, right?
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, it's a squad depth signing, but I don't think having him would be like saying, well, you've never got a chance to be the number one. So I think he could genuinely compete with Pat. I know that quite a few people sort of look down on the idea of signing him, but I personally think he is very good as a like combative number nine, stretch the play, hold the ball up, do a lot of what is actually required in this particular role. So yeah, we're not actually strongly linked with him at the moment, and it seems like Everton might actually make a bid for him, but I think it's one to watch.
Excellent. And Adam, did I detect a note of sadness in your Callum Wendo news?
Yeah, it's quite sad. It just sounds like we are sort of biding our time in the window now after what Radrizzani said last week in his interview with Phil Hay, The Athletic. Mm. It sounds like we're sort of watching the market now, but that felt like one that we could have jumped on. It felt like an opportunity missed, really. So I am quite sad about that. And I know that Tom Wilson is a big fan of his as well, who will be listening. And yeah, it is a shame that we're missing out on him. So maybe we'll go for someone like Shea Adams, maybe Ben Brereton Diaz, someone like that. There's been a few others linked, like Martin Terrier. I think we'll just be assessing options for the next 3 weeks and see what might come up towards the end of the window.
Yeah, I agree. And Adam, you raised the spectre of Radrizzani's interview there with Phil Hay. Hobbsy, what did you make of that interview? There was a lot of stuff in there, and also Angus Kinnear has also spoken to the Square Ball in the last week and said a fair bit of stuff, but maybe let's focus more on the Radrizzani interview. What did you make of it?
I thought it was okay. I'm not a big fan of him speaking in general. I'd rather he just never spoke, because it feels like whenever he does, he says stuff where we're like, oh no. But I mean, I don't think there was any particular moment like that, unless you're in the camp of like Bielsa should never, ever, ever have left. But I think he justified how he felt about it, at least, and why he made the decision that he made. Not everyone's going to buy that, but I kind of understood where he's coming from. Also, I thought, I think the thing for me that I thought, I don't know if I think this is really genuine, is when he was kind of said, oh, I think if I'd just gone and quickly done the deal for De Ketelaere, then I knew Milan were sleeping and I maybe could have got it done. It's like, what? That kind of doesn't really ring true to me, because I think if he did know that, if they were so sure he was going to be this player that they could, that would be the like icing on the cake signing, just go and do it. Don't wait. But I don't know what that really was about. Like, whether he was saying, well, we didn't really know what was happening with Rafinha at that time, so he waited a bit. But I think, to me, if De Ketelaere would have come to us, if we just went and got it done, we would have got it done. So it kind of says to me, he was kind of putting the brakes on it as well, because he wanted to see whether Milan would come or not. But yeah, apart from that, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, Adam, any further reflections on that interview? Anything that stood out to you?
No, not really. It was more the sort of waiting around now in the market, see what comes up sort of thing. And there's been rumours today that Orta's on holiday, so I don't think we'll see any business now for at least another week or so.
Victor Orta is on holiday. We've said that a few times today, I believe. yeah, I sort of broadly agree with you on the Rads interview, Hobbsy. Like, I personally just wish that all football senior management were completely invisible and didn't speak to anybody, but that's not the world we live in, particularly when you've got a bit of a thirst for the spotlight like Rads has. But yeah, I mean, there was some stuff where you could grumble about it if you really wanted to, but I just couldn't be asked, to be honest. So let's move on to talk about the 1-0 victory in the opening game at Elland Road against Wolves. Yeah, we're gonna follow the same format as we did in the dual header podcast last season, and we're gonna start with the interrogation, where I'm gonna ask Hobbsy and Adam 5 questions, plus some carefully selected follow-ups, depending on what they say about the game, and just really see how we saw it and see what we agree on and what we vehemently disagree on. Hopefully there'll be some of that. That's always good fun. But without further ado, let us move into question 1 of the interrogation. Obzi. Did we see Marsh's tactical identity in a Premier League game? What strengths of the system in particular do you think we saw on Saturday?
Yeah, definitely, I think. I mean, in the most simple terms, let's look at the two goals. that Leeds scored. So the first goal, this is exactly why we play narrow. So when we attack the box there, like we're kind of in a transition moment attacking the box, and Harrison plays a pass forwards. Leeds lose it because it was a bit of a loose pass, but we've got four players running into the box at the same time, all compact near each other, and they don't give any space for the Wolves defenders to get the ball out again. So we score from a counter-pressing situation. Like, it's not a scenario where we then create a really nice opportunity, because it's a shot from an angle that goes underneath the keeper's body. So I'm not saying it's like a carefully crafted goal, but the idea of that philosophy is to create shots in the box because you have caused chaos amongst the opposition back line. So that's the first one. And then the second one, we see a quick vertical attack where Stroik wins the ball on halfway, plays it to Greenwood, quick pass to Adams, who then plays that drilled forward ball, which I found particularly enjoyable, because I remember quite a lot of people on Twitter saying that Adams was not progressive and wouldn't pass the ball forward. So that was quite fun that he drilled it straight to the feet of Click, who was in that space where you want your number 10 to be. He quickly plays it, and that goal from there is a training ground goal, because that's the main thing. If you've watched the inside training videos on YouTube or on the Leeds app, then you'll see that constantly they've been working on low driven crosses, and we've got Aronson there arriving. Obviously it's given as an own goal, but he's there attacking it. So yeah, really nice to see that we scored two goals that come from the way that Marsh wanted us to play. First half also, thought we were winning the ball around halfway loads. We're winning the ball high up loads. We nearly scored that goal where Bamford's pressing the keeper, and the keeper, he very nearly, who was in goal in the FA Cup semi-final when it happened? The Man City number two keeper.
Oh, yeah.
Stefan, yep. That's it. Yeah, it was nearly that, where Mane just tackles him and it goes in. And then, yeah, but the funny thing is that we were on top in that first half, and we were seeing lots of how Marsh wanted us to play. But then they were still getting some pretty big opportunities by knocking it over the top of us or countering through it. Because that chance that I'm speaking about, literally, like, when that gets knocked back to Harrison and he doesn't manage to get the shot away, they are on the edge of our box about 5 seconds later, and Adams has to tackle them. So it's we saw the good stuff, and we also saw how we would get hit on the counter.
Yeah, absolutely. We did see some of the weaknesses. So Adam, what systemic weaknesses did Wolves expose, and probably through the first half at various points, but more or less in the second half, what were the points where Wolves exposed our weaknesses?
Well, I think the first thing to note is that our press wasn't as intense in the second half, and we kind of dropped off in that regard. And they pushed right up as well. So they were pressing us higher. The first half, our press was quite effective. We were kind of, like obviously said, we were sort of winning it on the halfway and higher up in like little packs of threes and fours usually as well, which was really good to see. I think it's the best we've pressed in quite a while, actually. And it's quite easy to see that Adams and Aronson and players like that are making a difference. Whereas the game in the second half, it wasn't quite like that. It became a lot more transitional for us, and that they had a little bit more control and they had a foothold in the game. So that's probably the first thing to note. But also, they also started to play the ball around us a bit quicker. That I felt like they actually made a bit more of an effort to up the tempo. And the main area of weakness for us, I think, was our right side. They overloaded that space quite a lot, and they got a lot of joy down there. We know that fullbacks in Marsh's system are the most likely area to be exposed, but Neto and Aitnuri, they really did have a bit of a field day down that side. They were constantly getting at Rasmus. And in fairness, I think that that is a very attacking left side, and is probably one of the better ones you're going to face outside of the top six, really, this season. That they're quite threatening players, both of them. Aitnuri is quite an attacking fullback. And it's also important to note that if the press breaks down because players aren't like hunting together like they were in the first half as much, then we also get moved around quite a lot and quite easily. And it felt like not only were they like upping the tempo, they were also able to sort of shift players around quite easily and get the ball around them, and then they'd be out of position. And I'm particularly worried about this going forward when there's sort of less mobile players in the team. Obviously, we had Rocker, Strauch, Llorente, those sorts, but also you'd be talking about someone like Liam Cooper as well, struggling when that happens and potentially being exposed. So those are the sorts of things I've been more worried about going forwards.
And we had a great question from Crombopoulos Matthew, which I just want to pick up the first part of, really, because I think it's interesting to think about what Wolves did that changed the game. So what changed tactically in the second half during the period Wolves dominated possession? Was it a drop, change from Wolves, a drop in our press effectiveness, or a bit of both? I noticed a couple of things. So I noticed on the rewatch that in the first 5 minutes of the second half, Wolves made a real point of just going over the top of our press. And that gave us, I think that put some doubt in our mind about how effective the press was going to be in the second half. And then throughout the rest of the half, I noticed that they really varied it. So sometimes they would go longer. Sometimes they would make sure they were moving the ball laterally. And I think they were also avoiding the passes that they knew were going to trigger us to move into the press really effectively. Was there anything else that either of you noticed about the way that Wolves played in the second half?
Yeah, I was going to say pretty similar to that, that I felt like they were really trying to miss it out in the second half. So there weren't, like, I would say in the first few minutes, like you say, we tried to press, and I think we did actually have a, like, in my head, pretty much from the moment the second half started, they were on top. But when I watched it back, that's not exactly how it happened. It was actually fairly even for the first 5 minutes or so of the half, but they began to really squeeze it from like 50 minutes on. And yeah, it was that we were trying to press, but we weren't quite managing to make it work. And I think, like you say, they were sort of going round it and over it quickly. And then I noticed that after that, they were basically then, once they were in our half, they pushed way higher up their defensive line than they did in the first half. So they weren't committing as much forward. They were just kind of committing their attackers forwards in counters in the first half. But the second half, they were trying purposefully to sustain that pressure. And you were starting to see Kilman and
Nathan Collins.
And Nathan Collins, yeah. Sorry, I don't know why I forgot his name then. Really. He's a defender that I really like. But he was... they were starting to do what our defenders were doing in the first half, which was quickly like winning those headers, getting in front of Bamford and winning the ball, and just not allowing us to break out. And then when they would do that, they would basically just sort of continually switch it from side to side. And because we're narrow, we've kind of all having to adjust across. And we were just then sort of pinned back.
And it also creates spaces, isn't it? When a team has to constantly laterally move across the pitch, eventually spaces are going to appear that the opposition can put the ball through. I think, saw that happen quite a few times.
But what I would say about it is they actually didn't create a chance like that, really. There was the moment where Aitnery got in on goal, and that actually came through them being very quick, because that came with us trying to get up the pitch. Bamford lose, like, he was arguing for a foul, but he's basically hit around halfway, and then one pass basically, and we basically, someone tried to run out. I can't remember who it was, but someone tried to run out and sort of intercept it before it could get to Aitnery. He nips it around them, and then he's into the box, and it's a good recovery challenge. But I mean, like, I'm not trying to say that they haven't created that opportunity, because they have, but that didn't kind of come through them sort of like passing their way through a gap. It was like, I mean, it's a counter-pressing kind of situation, and I can't claim that counter-pressing chances count for us, but not for them. so it's, you know, it is what it is, but I'm just saying, on the one hand, a better attacking team would have probably made some chances with that kind of dominance, but also we defended that well. We were nice and compact. Melier had to make some saves, but they were kind of all saves I would have expected him to make.
Yeah, the one at the end of the first half was really good, but that obviously is not in the period of dominance that we're talking about, so that's different. So here's a question from Drew UK3, and I'm going to go to Adam, then Hobbsy, and then I'm going to have a go at answering it too, because there has been some mixed views about Marsh on this podcast, and probably more of the contributors leaning towards not been convinced by him. So the question that Drew asked is, did everyone appreciate Marsh's tactics, including substitutions? Adam?
Yeah, I'd say in the first half particularly, yes, it wasn't perfect as we still didn't create loads from open play, but we looked a lot more like a unit. And like I mentioned, the sort of impacts thing. And also, like Hobbsy said, we were sort of more in their half camped, whereas that sort of flipped in the second half and they were camped more in our half and pushed right up onto the halfway line. And it was good to see it was like our defensive line was just so high up. And it also meant that you can counter press a little bit better because you can counter press actually in the opposition's half, which is where you want to be doing it rather than, you know, when you're all in a deep block. So yeah, in that sense, I was particularly pleased. I also enjoyed seeing the sort of rocker drop just in front of the centre backs to sort of build up and distribute. Or he drops up the left side of them because obviously he's left footed, so that suited him to build up the ball. And in Adams, his partner, you had someone who was a little bit further up, a little bit higher to do the counter pressing stuff. And I thought it was really good. I thought they dovetailed quite nicely. Having that sort of visible destroyer and distribute pivot is really good to see. And hopefully that just continues to improve. And yeah, I was in the second half, particularly, I was happy with how he changed the game. With a different option in click as well. And that came at quite an important time because we were kind of under the cosh at that time. And it helped the ball just stick up front a little bit more. And he did sort of the things you want him to do in that area.
Hobbsy, did you appreciate Marsh's tactics and substitutions and game management?
Well, I've always been more on board with the principles in the first place. But I did agree that we weren't actually seeing those at the end of last season. So what I really wanted to see beginning with pre-season, and I felt that I was seeing it, but it was good to see it in an actual Premier League game, as I wanted to see the tactics starting to work and his game philosophy coming across to the team. I think it was, and I understand aesthetically it's not going to be for everyone, but I think I don't think you could say that it wasn't at least coming towards where it's supposed to be. I think it will be effective in some games, in other games it's not going to be effective.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it fine enough. I think it will bring exciting back and forth games, but probably isn't going to bring a lot of the control.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think I said in the group chat on Saturday that at half time, actually, I posted in the group saying that the first half was exciting in a sort of crash, bang, wallop, demolition derby, loads of tackles flying and everyone running around sort of way. And I can I agree with you that I can definitely see the tactical methods, or particularly in the first half, could see the tactical methods at play and was able to appreciate them. I think the point that you raise for me, Hobbs, is that it's probably not a style of football that I particularly like would choose to watch as a neutral, but that's by the by, really. Like I can see that to a degree it will be effective. I think the one thing that I would say is that I think Wolves marginally shaded the game and we were probably lucky to come away with a win. So I'm not wanting to get too carried away just with the fact that we have won, because I think there will be a lot of games that are that tight this season and we will lose as many of them as we win, at least I would imagine, over the course of the season. So just one sort of note of caution, really.
No,
that I don't want
that.
It to add.
And I mean, even I'm probably the highest on it, in terms of the overall performance, but I would still agree that on the balance of that kind of 20 minute kind of period, Wolves probably deserved it, because even when I felt we were more on top in the first half, they were still getting counter-attack chances.
Yep.
That we basically didn't get.
Yep.
when they were on top of us.
Yep.
So I would say that it was a game that you could say it could have gone either way, and they probably just about deserved it more.
Yeah.
But in football, in tight games, which it was a tight game, you have to sort of show more than just maybe having more possession and a few more shots. Yeah. Like, there is more to it than that.
I agree. There is. Hobbsy, tell me what Click did that helped to change the game.
Well, I think there's a few things. So I think, and funnily enough, I actually did a Patreon video about this. So if you haven't signed up to our Patreon, it's patreon.com/ASAW, and I would appreciate that. That was an unplanned ad break because we forgot to plan in the ad break. but in a funny way, he brought a bit of Bielsa in his runs in behind in wide areas. I don't think everything that he was doing was Bielsa-y, because he's basically exactly where he needed to be for that Marsh goal, for the winning goal. But I think, first of all, he brought like more intensity when Rodrigo was basically knackered. So he was more dynamic in and out of possession, so giving them less time on the ball. He was able to then move into spaces to receive it and hold it and give it off to a supporting player, which we were really struggling to do. Rodrigo was not doing it at all, and Bamford was trying, and it was sort of bouncing off him. He was losing out on physical duels, and I think we kind of saw the difference between that Cagliari game, where it was a pretty low intensity game of football, and a Premier League game where basically in the second half he was struggling. So I think we needed Click basically to give us sort of that oxygen and help to get us up the pitch a bit more. And yeah, he moved them around. He gave them something to worry about.
He finds space incredibly smartly, doesn't he? He's like, that's one of the things I really love watching him do. Adam, so if we do, if as we expect, I think, if Click does move on, and we did do a goodbye podcast to him last week, and then I was really pleased to see him come on at the weekend. Do we have another player who can do what Click does?
Really? I think in terms of like that attacking midfield profile in particular, he worked so well at the weekend because he kind of relieved some pressure for us. He was kind of that glue that the ball could stick to for a bit, and then he'd just give it off quite quickly, quite sharply, and then he'd move again. Like Hobbsy mentioned, he's just constantly finding spaces. And I don't think there's other players that do that really in our team. I think that the next successor for him is Greenwood, but I wouldn't say that he's the same type of profile in that sense. He doesn't really do those exact sort of things. And then the other one that's probably closer to him is Forshaw, but he's probably better at doing things in a sort of deeper role. So neither of them are the same. So Click's like the only one we really have there. And yeah, like you say, he kind of changed the game at the weekend and just gave us an alternative to Rodrigo where the ball would actually stick to him. And that's what ultimately really won us the game.
Absolutely. So Adam has, yeah, has gone.
And I think, Darren.
That's okay.
I was just going to say that I think that with Click, with Greenwood, it appears that Jesse sees him deeper, and obviously brought him on there again. And I thought he played well in his short time on.
He did. I was going to follow up to ask about Greenwood. it's fine.
My bad.
No, don't worry. Adam, most of our chance creation came from the counter press, as Hobbsy's already said, which I think it'd be fair to say was a bit hit and miss. It was pretty consistent in the first half, maybe didn't make as many chances as you would hope, and then it was pretty non-existent for maybe 25 minutes in the second half. But so how do we make chances if the counter press isn't effective? That's one of the things I'm worried about this season.
Yeah, open play chances weren't plentiful, were they really? I think two things for me is maybe like another profile up front, which is closer to Bamford stylistically. It gives Harrison another like outlet to hit. And on that note, he was fairly quiet at the weekend, in my opinion, but he still came up with a few really killer crosses. And we sort of said last season that you kind of lose part of his game when Bamford was out of the team with no proper target to hit. So why not have two of them? Why not have two options? They could either play together or they could play, you know, like one of them could be in the team, one of them could be on the bench. We could mix it up like that. But it's a shame that we don't have someone of Bamford's type in the team. And we mentioned Shea Adams earlier, like, he would be that sort of player there where you'd have Bamford and him as options for Harrison to hit. So that's one way that chance creation could be improved on. But the other way I would say is to get more like moments players in the team. And I don't necessarily think this is a good thing to rely on these sorts of players who can sort of conjure something up out of nothing. But we had Rafinha last season who was able to do that in tight games. And from my reckoning, I think Wolves are going to be in a similar part of the table to us next season. And so these sorts of games where you're going to need moments players to come up with big moments. And Sinisterra, obviously, he springs to mind for me because he is that sort of exciting attacking player, very much a flair player, very fast, very direct. And so he could potentially be that sort of player in those tight games where you could get something just from him having a moment of brilliance.
Hobbsy, our friend Udav asked a really good question, which isn't entirely linked to this, but I think it's important anyway. So Udav says that he rewatched the game and most of our good attacks in consolidated possession phases involved Rocker dropping deep into the back line. Do you think that we might suffer from an over-reliance on Rocker in build-up this season?
Probably, to be honest. I don't think we've got another passer in the squad that's like him. I think Forshaw's more of like a possession circulator, and Rocker is a distributor, a progressor. You saw him driving the ball like through the lines, and yeah, I don't think we have got another player like that. I think they maybe would like Greenwood to become a player like that, but that's going to take time, and he may even with years he might not ever get to Rocker, who's obviously been playing this role for a really long time. And was already at a high level before. So, yeah, that's kind of how it is, I think, for a team like us. It's hard to have another player of that quality. Let's hope he stays fit.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so. And just one further follow-up that I just wanted to touch on briefly. So a lot of the discussion after the game was around, like, how many opportunities to make chances we had where we didn't make opportunities. And I think we talked about this a lot last season, and it's one of the things I'm concerned about for the season. So do you think sometimes fans put too much stock into the times we get into good positions but don't actually make a chance? I'm saying that because we notice those when we do it. We don't necessarily notice it when the opposition do it. And Wolves got into just as many of those positions as we did on Saturday. So I just thought it was quite an interesting philosophical discussion, really. Adam, what do you think?
I think teams are always wasteful, and that sort of does go unnoticed sometimes. And I'm not just talking about shots, but like you say, positions almost on the pitch, where players just don't make that pass quite on time or quite right. And that's normal. I think that's fairly normal, even at a high level. So, you know, not every player is Lionel Messi or Kevin De Bruyne who's going to pick the perfect pass more often than they're not, or put the ball in a dangerous area or whatever. So I'm not too worried about that. I would, like I say, like to create a bit more from open play. Rather than just relying on chaos. I guess I know that is open play, but you know what I mean by that. Like, I'd like to do some of these like free-flowing moves where we sort of, the only part of the game where we saw that was the goal, where we actually did put a few passes together and then put the ball in the box from the low cutback. I'd like to see more of that, yes. So we get in those positions, that's where we might have some joy this season. But I'm not too worried when we are wasteful. I understand that players will... I think something we're always guilty of with, like, Rodrigo is we get frustrated when he gives the ball away, but he at least is trying things sometimes. And so you have to appreciate that creative players will do that and will give the ball away.
Mm. Just for the record, with Rodrigo, I get frustrated when he just doesn't do anything rather than when,
yeah,
when he tries
well.
Things that don't come off. Hobbsy?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Obviously, I mentioned like that Ait Nouri opportunity where we have just a desperate tackle in the box, or it's a one-on-one, and that chance where Adams had to tackle him on the edge of the box after they broke from us being about to shoot into an open goal. So I'm aware that they had those opportunities. And I think particularly for our level of team, you are going to stack those opportunities a lot. And particularly when we have a front line that you would probably say is a lot more worker-y than it is real technicians. So that is definitely going to happen to us a lot. I don't know whether I'd say, do we put too much stock on it? Maybe we do a little bit because we have natural bias towards our own team, but be interesting to see how it goes this season. I feel we will be better at creating chances than we were last season, but I also feel like we're going to have some games where we are that Dr. Cox from Scrubs moment where he's smashing his head against the
you love that gift.
Against the side, yeah, my favourite gift.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Okay, question five. We're just going to have a few seconds talking about each of the new players just because it was our first time seeing them in a competitive environment. So, Adam, what did you make of Ramos Christiansen?
That was a good reference to last week.
Thank you. Nice callback.
It was. I think he'll have easier days than this game.
I hope so.
I mentioned that, yeah, well, he had two threatening players down that side.
He did.
I think that was a bit of the problem for him and maybe not enough support. But we know that fullbacks are going to be exposed. I did enjoy his meaty tackle. I also enjoyed that he took a meaty hit to the face and still managed to play on. But I'll let him off for potentially having a bit of a dodgy performance after a bash to the head, which, let's be honest, was probably a penalty.
It was definitely a penalty. Hobbsy, what do you make of Christensen?
Yeah, tough debut. Worst of the four, but he did. You still saw how he fitted in, and he did some. It's not to say he didn't do some good stuff alongside struggling to deal with two good players.
I would agree with all of that. I hope he manages to have an easier day at the weekend. Rocker, let's go with Hobbsy first.
Yeah, really, really strong first half. What we haven't talked about is I just loved that he was always in the right spot when the ball kind of broke out. He just recovered it a lot of times just by being there. And in pre-season, I was concerned that he would be slow to those moments, but His positioning just seemed to be better this time around. I don't know why that was, but I didn't see those moments where I was like, oh, he's half a yard slow there. So yeah, really happy with that. Second half, he struggled. I think he is going to struggle if we're stuck on the back foot for ages because that's not where the game suits him.
Yeah, I agree. Adam?
Yeah, we touched on his distribution already, but some of his passes in the first half were really nice, really aggressive, really forward thinking. I think he's got a lovely left foot. I particularly really liked him in that regard. I agree with Hobbsy, like positionally he was pretty decent, and that's probably what he's going to have to be given his lack of mobility. But he was fine. He wasn't my favourite, but he was fine.
I really, really like him. I'm going to enjoy watching him a lot this season, I think. That's going to be fun for me. Adam, talk about Adams.
Yeah, I think that you kind of talk about Rocker and Adams when you talk about them together, and how they dovetailed with each other. And like I mentioned earlier, like I really, really liked Adams in terms of his counter-pressing and pressing in their half, in the first half. I don't know how many times I've got the numbers to hand, but he seemed to have so many recoveries or interceptions or tackles or blocks, whatever it was, so many high up as well, like I say. So in that sense, he was really good. And distribution wise, a couple of nice passes, but not as much to shout about as Rocker. But together, I thought they worked really well. So even if there was some areas of each player that I wasn't as happy with or keen on, as a pair, they seemed pretty decent. Maybe not for that 20 minutes period of the second half, but in general, they were pretty good.
Hobbsy?
Yeah. Wouldn't say much more than that. Thought it was impressive. And I think they suit each other as a pair. Really happy with him.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I do think they dovetail really well. And I think that'll be good to watch that develop over the course of the season. Hobbsy talked to us about Brendan Aaronson.
Yeah, he was brilliant really, wasn't he? I think we were probably in the group that were thinking, oh, this price is expensive, and I still do think that, but also he was as good as we could have hoped him to be on Premier League debut, threatening all the time with runs in behind. He made the most pressures in the whole Premier League this weekend with 31.
I'm fuming.
Yeah, with 31. And yeah, that's, I think that was third in the top five leagues this weekend actually. He set the tone of the press, and what he did really, really well for us in possession was receiving in half space. So you can see, even though we're probably going to play him centrally, you can see how he fits on the right in this system better than Rafinha did, because Rafinha wanted to receive on the touchline with his hips facing inside the pitch, so that he could turn and run with it like that. Aaronson will receive it with his back to the goal and take it on the back foot and spin. in that half space, and that then totally changes the rest of the team structure, because we got the ball in a completely different space. And yeah, he looked a real threat. He took some good shots. Just a shame that he doesn't get credited with that goal, because I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he only deserves it if he actually scored it. So,
well, yeah, you know.
I do know what you mean. His performance deserves to score
it.
Yeah.
He's about to score it and it hits the other guy's shin.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because that doesn't go down on XG, does it? Because obviously he doesn't actually shoot, but it would have been a massive chance. It would have been like 0.7 or 0.8 or something.
Yeah, it would. But I'm contractually obliged by John to say that it didn't. It wasn't, so I'm going to say that. Okay.
Adam, the ball went in the net.
It did go in the net, and I was very pleased to
see
it going.
These bloody Excel wankers.
Adam, tell me about Aronson and what you made of him.
There's not much to add, really. Hobbsy's kind of stole my stat, which I had that I really wanted to say. But yeah, he was really good, wasn't he? And he's probably my man of the match. I think he did deserve the goal, even if he didn't touch it. His sheer presence means that I know he has to react there and put it in. And yeah, I agree with everything Hobbsy said in terms of his attacking play. He was really just busy is the word I would use, and sort of buzzing around in terms of pressures and pressing them and counter-pressing. And you can see how he fit straight into the system already in terms of off the ball. And then on the ball, he was still really decent and constantly a threat. And he looked to have a go at their fullback quite often. And yeah, just a lot to like. And he's only going to get better. And I was in the camp of, yeah, the price tag seems a little bit high. So I'm glad that he may be already proving us wrong. So hopefully he plays more like that in future.
Fantastic. And unless either of you got anything else to say, that concludes our Wolverhampton Wanderers review.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, let's move on to the Southampton preview. Hobbsy, what was Southampton's transfer business like this past summer?
Just got to get my screenshot back up. But there's been an interesting one, because you may be aware that they have been trying to sign every young player from Manchester City. So they signed Gavin Bazunu, the goalkeeper, 20, for 12.6 million. They signed Romeo Lavia, also. Well, he's actually 18, but from that same under-23s team. Although Bazunu actually went on loan last season. But yeah, for 11 million, I think, maybe rising to 15 with a buyback. So they've spent a lot of money there. And they'd apparently made a big bid for oh my gosh, why can't I remember anyone's names today? Liam Delap, the striker from that same Man City 23s team. Because I think that the Man City youth, I think it was the Man City youth recruitment head, went to be basically work at Southampton. So he went to sign all these players that he's worked with before. They did obviously haven't got Delap, but they also got Sekou Mara, teenage striker from Bordeaux, Arnel Belakotrap, centre back from Bochum, who I know absolutely nothing about. So, Adam, I hope you know something about him.
Tiny bit.
Joe Aribo from Rangers for less than 7 million. And I absolutely love Joe Aribo. So, I think that's a great signing. And Matthias Lies, who I presume is backup goalkeeper from Altay from Turkey on a free transfer.
Adam, do you want to fill in your bits of knowledge there from the bits that Hobbsy wasn't quite sure on?
Well, all I have to say really is that it's just lots of children plus Joe Arriba, really, isn't it? And,
yeah,
it and that's is. What's worrying for them, for me. I think they might be in a bit of bother this season if these signings don't work, if they don't actually adapt like quickly to men's football, because a lot of them haven't had the experience. Even like Gavin Bazunu, who's played a full season for Portsmouth and was very impressive in League One, he's stepping up two leagues. So that's quite concerning for me. Arriba should be a good signing. I think that he could work in quite a few roles in their team, and I do think that's a good signing for the price they've paid. Bela Kotchap is not someone I've watched loads of, but I am aware of him because he's fairly highly rated as a young centre-back in Germany. He's quite an aggressive, quite fast player. He's not great with the ball yet, but I think that's some side of his game they're probably looking to develop. But yeah, he's quite a fast
and Don't think he played against Spurs.
He did not. No, he didn't. I don't know whether they plan to use him in games where they maybe need a little bit more in transition the other way, so defensively. So maybe in home games, he might be more of a key player for them when there's teams that are going to be hitting the ball over the top, because obviously they're a similar team to us and similar system to us. So yeah, maybe he's one for those sorts of games, and maybe not the games against Spurs where thrusting young players in maybe isn't the best thing to do. Although having said that, they played Romeo Lavia, didn't they? So who knows?
And thinking about the game at the weekend against Spurs, Adam, you watched it, I think, didn't you? So you mentioned a kind of tactical similarity between Southampton and Leeds. And clearly there's a kind of Red Bull genus there. How tactically similar are this season's Southampton to Leeds, Adam?
I'm unsure at the moment because I don't actually know how they're going to set up. I haven't actually looked at any of their pre-season games. So I'm only going off the Spurs one, which is why they played a back five with Kyle Walker-Peters at right wing back, who is a very offensive fullback or wing back. He's a very dribbly boy. And Gineppo at left wing back, who's literally a winger and a right-footed one at that, playing left wing back. He's very dribbly as well. He got an assist on the day, which was fairly decent, but it was just a weird selection choice for me. And I don't think it's something we're going to see much going forward against teams like Leeds. I think it's more probably for games against the sort of bigger sides away from home and see if they can catch them in transition. I think that's what Ralph was going for. But yeah, with Gineppo at left wing back, Emerson Royale and Kulusevski kind of had a bit of a field day down his side. They constantly just got at him and they got in on that side. And yeah, so I just think it was a bit of a weird one, like I say, from Ralph. And I think that we might see him go slightly different against us. We could be seeing him go system for system or thereabouts in the 4-2-2-2, or he could go back to the 4-3-1-2 that we saw towards the back end of last season when they played us at Elland Road with just kind of a narrow diamond in midfield. I'm unsure. If they play a back five, I'd be a little bit surprised, but I guess I don't know, because I think Ralph is sometimes tactically flexible these days.
Hobbsy, what do you reckon?
I think they seem to be committing to the 3-5-2 from what I've... So I watched the game too, but also I chatted a bit with a regular Southampton watcher who his exact quote, "Ralph has twisted himself up with the 3-5-2 because he's worried about the defence, but it doesn't work on any level."
So now Leeds lose. Thanks for that one.
So yeah, and I mean, I felt that it didn't work on any level from what I watched.
Yeah.
It looked a mess to me. Apart from that nicely worked goal. I mean, when I say nicely worked, what I mean is nice individual bit of play from Gineppo, and then one of those finishes where you volley it into the ground from James Ward-Prowse. But yeah, I mean, Spurs would sort of... I mean, Spurs are obviously a very good team and will be in the top three, I think. It's hard to draw a lot of conclusions about Southampton in a game where they just got battered. But I felt like it was a mess of nothing, really. But what I was very impressed about was Romeo Lavia, who I thought was fantastic in a game where his team was awful. But yeah, I've also written down Bednarek is cat piss. So
you won't get analysis like this anywhere else, will you?
He actually used the phrase.
The ball going to him will definitely be a pressing trigger for us.
That's fair enough.
The phrase bin juice in the group chat, actually, so that's two different descriptions we've had now,
both equally visual. Hobbsy, I think you've already answered this question really, but I wanted to ask it anyway. So listener David Hall asks, apart from James Ward-Prowse's free kicks, I'm going to upgrade that to James Ward-Prowse, apart from James Ward-Prowse, are Southampton just bang average? And I think you've said yes to this already, but just...
Well, yeah, I have. I think what I'd say is they've got some... There are a few individuals that I like.
Yeah.
Like, you've already mentioned Kyle Walker-Peters, who I think is a nice threat. I like Joe Aribo. I don't think they should be playing him up front, which is what Ralph seemed to be doing. He had Aribo and Adam Armstrong up front, which is just a horrible front two at Premier League level. So I like Aribo is a ball-carrying midfielder who played a bit up front for Rangers in their run to the Europa League final because Morelos was dead and Fashion Sakala is awful. So
they are average, but with some decent, with some decent players.
In fact, bad. I'm going to say bad.
With some decent players. And just for Joe Hill, I just want it to be known that I haven't forgotten Kyle Waterpeakers, and I'm sad that neither Joe referenced that. Okay, so Adam, are we expecting the same from Leeds again? The 4-2-3-1, 4-2-2 sort of blend thing that we saw at the weekend?
Yeah, I'm sorry to be boring, but I don't think there's going to be much changes. I think it'll probably be largely the same unless there's been an injury that we're unaware of. We're recording on Wednesday. I think the press conference is tomorrow, so good timing, guys. But no, it's fine. Yeah, I don't think there'll be much change. I think it'll probably be more of the same. I think Marsh is going to try and get as many of these players into the system as possible that he knows that he can trust now. So Aronson, Christensen, Adams will always play. And then the only players that could sort of be shifted about, maybe Rodrigo could go out for someone like Click, and maybe even Gelhart could come into the team somewhere. But I think that's unlikely. And unless Sinister is back fit, I don't think he's going to get in either. So it's probably going to be unchanged, in my opinion.
Mm. In the whole history of All Stats, Aren't We, Adam, I just want to point out that we've never recorded a podcast after the press conference. because that would be, you know, what would be the point in what baseless speculation would we be able to do if we had the information from
That's
the manager?
A good point. We'd lose points in this section, wouldn't we?
We certainly would. So Hobbsy, we've got Cooper, Forshaw, Aileen, Firpo, Sinisterra, and probably some other people I'm forgetting out injured. Do you expect to see any of them back at the weekend?
Well, I think it sounds like Sinisterra had been training. Whether or not he's ready to be included, I don't know. We know if it was Bielsa, he wouldn't be yet, but I have a feeling that he might. If he's okay, he'll be on the bench and maybe given a short appearance. But I think none of the others. It sounds like Cooper might be getting closer as well, but I doubt he's at the level to be included.
And
I know the others won't be. Yeah, but they still won't be that far ahead of schedule.
And you're expecting the same team as well, I assume, Hobbsy?
Yeah, I mean, it would only be whether there were any niggles that we don't know about.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's think about the tactical issues for a minute. So two teams who play with some similarities. What decides games like this where there's two teams trying to do the same thing, Adam?
I was going to say moments players. That seems to be my stock answer at the moment. But yeah, I think that's when it's a game, it can be quite cagey because the teams are sort of similarly set up or playing in a similar style. That can be where it is won or lost. Another way would be sort of transitionally. I actually think that might play into our hands a little bit more, being away from home and then being maybe the aggressors and playing on the front foot a little bit more. So maybe a moments player in transition would be my answer, Darren, probably. I am worried a little bit in regard to if they're playing with wing-backs and they're attacking us. Our full-backs are obviously quite often exposed, and if Christensen's up against Gineppo, then he might have a bit of a tough time in terms of Gineppo is a very good dribbler. It is definitely his best attribute. So that's the sort of thing I'd be worried about for us, but for them, I think we could hit them on transition. So, yeah.
Hobbsy, what do you think if it's Strouk again in the left wing, left fullback position? How do you think he'd cope against Kyle Waterpeakers?
Well, I actually think that coming up against wingbacks is probably a little bit better when you struggle against width because they're just starting a little bit deeper. So they're less likely to hit you like in a wide area over the top, high up the pitch. They've got to sort of come onto the ball from a bit deeper, by which point hopefully you've got back into a little bit more of a shape. So I think that it kind of plays into our hands a little bit, even though it feels like, oh no, that's width. I prefer width there than I prefer it in a three-man forward line, I think. I kind of don't mind that too much. But I think that in terms of where I think we win the game or where the game gets won either way is execution in the final third. So I don't necessarily mean moments, players, although it could be that. But it's when we're going for those kinds of moves that we went for the winning goal against Wolves, it's putting together those sort of quick passing combinations. Whichever team manages to put one or two of those moves together, I think they'll be the team that can win it. And I would suggest that we have, like, I don't think we've got the best attack out there in the league by any means. Like, it's a lower mid table attack, really. But I think compared to Southampton, I think we've got the players that can put those moves together more often.
So in this game, it might just turn out to be a battle of who's got the superior automatic weapons, and that would probably be us on this occasion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think so. And I think whose press kind of works the best as well. And like I said, we saw last season that we could get exposed by a good press, and Southampton away really did that to us. We could not get the ball out. But if you remember, the midfield we had that day was, I think, Click and Roberts and Rodrigo or something like that. It was like a horror show midfield. Whereas I think the midfield that we're likely to put out this time, we are not going to struggle to get out in the same way. Rocker should always be kind of giving us exits, I think. Whereas I think if we can get on Bednarek's first touch every time, then I feel we're going to cause some errors.
Mm. And Adam, you know, this game, it's a team with two teams who are really committed to a kind of counter-pressing situation. Is there a risk that this game just gets bogged down in constant turnovers and never really sort of falls into any sort of meaningful pattern?
That's exactly how it looked at Elland Road last time. I would say that's quite likely. And I agree with what Hobbsy said about the pressing. And if it just becomes quite cagey and a bit of a midfield battle where there's just lots of turnovers, then yeah, it could be quite a frustrating watch, to be honest. But I think it's definitely a game we should be looking to win. I think for me, Southampton on paper are one of the weakest sides in the league this season. I actually have them to go down in my predictions. So now I've said that, we're going to lose, aren't we? But, you know, it is a game where even away from home, I would expect us to try and get 3 points, and hopefully we do. It'd be a perfect start to the season.
And Hobbsy, do Southampton have any particular vulnerabilities that we can exploit? And you've already mentioned Bednarek as one hit in the counter press. Cat piss in the counter press.
Yep. that's good. That could be a band name. sorry, I've lost myself there on that one.
Vulnerabilities.
Yes, that's it. I mean, I think Adam already said it in terms of the left wing back spot, which is an interesting one because obviously Spurs had a lot of width with Kulusevski and Emerson Royale hitting that space and just killing them there. I would say that Aronson and Christensen will probably get into those areas high up the pitch, even though Aronson and we as a team will be narrow. I think it doesn't mean we can't hit those wide areas at all. I think we did see Aronson do that a bit against Wolves anyway.
I think that's a fair point, Hobbsy, because although we do play a narrow system, it doesn't mean that we don't use the wide parts of the pitch. It just means that when we are in the wide parts of the pitch, the whole team compresses over into that side, right? I think it's important that people do remember that. So I agree. I think we will definitely see us trying to get into those areas. Okay, cool. I think that basically covers us. We've already said where we think the game will be won or lost. We're all anticipating a Southampton win and a scrappy and horrible game, which we'll immediately want to forget. Please do check out your Patreon feed and check out our new Patreon, which the address for which is what, Hobbsy?
patreon.com/ASAW.
And you did a video on Click this week.
Yeah, I mean, I basically did it on why were Leeds looking good in the first half, why did Wolves then get on top, and then why did we manage to change it, what did Click do to change it. Little bit of what we've talked about, but with some with some examples from the tape.
From the tape, not from the spreadsheets, from the tape. We will also be recording two bonus podcasts a month. We've recorded one last week, which was a reflection
on Mateus Click.
Yeah. Also on Mateus Click, on Click's career at Leeds. And we are going to revive, after killing it off, we are going to revive our development team. We can't call it 23s, are we, anymore, which is devastating.
It'll be 21s, aren't
doesn't
we,
scan
it?
Quite as well though, does it? It doesn't have that internal rhyme, so that's not quite as good. So we'll come up with a pithy title for that, or we'll just call it the 21s podcast. So we'll be back next week on the main feed in the midweek again to review the Southampton game and to preview the Chelsea game. And if you're on our Patreon feed, we'll be putting some good stuff out there next week's video, and then the 21s podcast the following week. But until then, dear listeners, all I will say is enjoy the game at the weekend, and bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.